Welcome, post-holiday revelers from every time and place, to episode 135 of the Nerdstravaganza Podcast, where you don't need to be a lord to have a good time. I'm Tom.
And I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And in this episode, in case I didn't drop enough clues, we will be discussing this year's Doctor Who Christmas special. Or is it Doctor Whom? I never can get that right. I guess it's Who. That is the title. Is that proper English?
I think you got it right.
Okay. Want to Brian away on that one, but maybe we'll leave that for a post-show discussion.
I'm not British. I don't know.
Well, the British are doing it Who, so I guess that says it all.
That's true. They did invent the language, therefore it is proper. Very well. Let us carry on. Actually, before we carry on, we should all fire up our personal Tardai, which I declare is the plural of TARDIS, whether it is or not, and leap back through time to find content for our usual Weekly Geekly, Geekly Weekly updates. I suspect some Christmas presents may be involved. Let's find out. Chris, lead us off.
Sure. Well, just as a small digression, what I gave my girlfriend was the BBC Yahtzee Dialect Collector Cup, along with Yahtzee dice that have graphics for sonic screwdrivers, TARDISes, and River's Diary, and that was a hit. And then for me, what she gave me was a cool t-shirt. It was Steampunk Flash. Basically, ThinkGeek has this whole line where it's the logo of the superhero, and the main image is done as kind of like a brass plate, and then when there would be like the back color to the logo, that is actually just filled in with gears instead. And I've already gotten a couple of compliments on it.
I believe you wore that to game night, did you not?
Yes, that is the shirt.
Yes.
I had to wear it to game night, of course. And then my son gave me a 7-inch tablet. So now I have joined the tablet crowd, and I guess between my tablet and my phone and my laptop, I'm going to have to figure out which one I'm going to use so I can save battery life on all of them. I think I'm going to use my phone now as more of a phone communication device, and I'm going to use my laptop as my word processing production machine, and then my tablet is just going to be my consumption machine, which, you know, that's what I think most tablets are for anyway.
Yep.
That's it.
Very cool, man. A very Christmassy update, or Kwanzaa-y, or Hanukkah-y, depending on what you celebrate. Brian, what about you, man?
I will follow Chris's example, and I will discuss what I gave my girlfriend this Christmas season, which was a glove.
Okay.
Come on, guys.
My imagination can go anywhere with that comment.
Oh, you're no fun. I got some pretty cool stuff. I got a PlayStation 4 game, which is practically unheard of for me, but I'm very excited about the potential. I'm sure I'll have hours and hours of patches when I finally do fire that thing up. But after that, I'm looking forward to playing Shadows of Mordor. Thank you, Tom.
Nice.
You're welcome. Yes, enjoy.
I got the new hotness in Signar Battlejacks. I got a Dynamo. That's kind of exciting, you know. I have to put him together and then redesign my entire army around one piece. That's always
fun. Where do you play?
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to. I love the game, but
it's a labor of love.
Yeah. And I got the Coup expansion, whose name I don't really recall. Reformation, maybe?
For Coup, yeah, Coup Reformation.
Coup Reformation, which I know everyone else already has, and I have enjoyed playing, but now I just feel better knowing that if, you know, five other people don't show up for game night, I can sit and play Reformation by myself.
Cool. Sounds like a pretty good haul for you, sir. Anything else?
Nothing else.
All right, Cam, what about you, man?
Oh, man. I know you guys saw online, but for the listeners, my brother, and it's very appropriate for this episode, my brother, who is not a Doctor Who fan whatsoever, just knows how much I love Doctor Who, and my favorite doctor, I hope I'm not spoiling anything, but is David Tennant. I don't even know how he remembered that, because he's really not tuned into anything Doctor Who or even sci-fi related usually. But he made me a game table completely from scratch. I mean, I think it was a coffee table that he put together, but he made it completely Doctor Who centric. The whole tabletop is filled with Tennant centric scenes that he printed out and cut and pasted and shellacked onto the top of the table. It has Dalek legs. It has like a police box body. It's a TARDIS body. It's absolutely amazing. I was blown away. He's been staying with me for the holidays, and he was in his room, and he wouldn't come out for like days, and I heard sawing and drilling and all kinds of stuff. And all he told me was just don't go in the room. So I knew it was something for me, but I had no inkling whatsoever it was going to be anything like that. And when he unveiled it on Christmas morning, I was truly blown away and touched. It's pretty amazing. Got some board games, got some clothes, and, you know, the standard socks, underwear that we all love to hate. But, yeah, I mean, all in all, it was an amazing Christmas. Got to spend it with my family and got a really, really personalized gift for my brother that I'll cherish.
Yeah, I saw that on the Facebook. That is amazing, and I can't wait to see it see it in person.
Yeah, next game night, come over and take a look at it. I mean, it's a sight to behold.
I'm officially adopting your brother, by the way.
Hey, he said he's available to do commission, so if you're interested, let him know. Other than that, you know, just spent time with the fam, did some gaming. Our weekly game night was canceled because it was on Thursday night, Christmas, of course. But got to spend some time gaming with the family, and, you know, that's what Christmas is all about, right?
Indeed.
Exactly.
All about spending time with the family and getting presents. I guess that brings it around to me. I don't think I'll be able to top that custom gift you got. That is really cool. But nevertheless, it is a thought that counts, and people were very thoughtful. I received from the family a load of GameStop gift cards, so I will be going on a little shopping spree in the coming days.
Nice.
At GameStop. Always happy to receive those and the freedom to purchase that they bring. Let's see, for the Wii U, I got Bayonetta 2. And as well, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, two games I've wanted for some time. And, let there be no doubt as to my commitment to Final Fantasy XIV, I got the PS4 version. So I now have the PC, PS3, and PS4 versions of that game.
you're hardcore.
Yeah, I'm way into it, man.
That is completest.
It is indeed. So, Brian, look forward to playing with me, well, hopefully this week.
I will believe it when I see it.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. As with the PS3, I installed, patched, and then, like, got tired and went to sleep. So I'll make up for that, I promise. But let's see. Oh, and in addition to that, I gifted myself some Amiibos, which are those little miniatures that you can scan into your Wii U. They do different things depending on the game you're playing. For the game I'm playing right now on the Wii U, which is the Hyrule Warriors game, they grant you items. You can use up to 5 of them per day to get items that you can use in the game. So those have been cool. And, oh, one last thing. I joined something called the Best Buy Gamers Club Unlocked or Reloaded or some such thing. Basically, it's a pretty good deal. For $30, you get like a 2-year membership, and you get like 20% off all game purchases. That means new.
Wow.
Yeah. And in addition, you get like an extra trade-in bonus if you're the type who trades in games. So pretty good deal going on that. I recommend that. It's $30 if you buy a new game at Best Buy. So something to look into.
Does it only apply to brand new games, or does it apply also to, like, I know they sell a lot of pre-owned games as well.
It says off all eligible games. I will look into that and report back. I think it's just like a flat 20% off all games. That's my reading of it.
That's pretty sweet.
I would like to commend you on your optimism, thinking that Best Buy will be around in 2 years. Best of luck with that.
Well, look, if GameStop can persist, surely Best Buy can, right?
Yeah, tell Blockbuster that.
Yeah, I know. Well, look, for $30, you can't go wrong. You know, it occurs to me that maybe they're like, you know what? This will put us in a better position to, we'll have cash on hand to make us more attractive to a buyer in the fire sale. I don't know.
Yeah, or pay for the bankruptcy, right?
Right, right. they're building a war chest to exit the market gracefully, correct?
They got to pay for all those executive golden parachutes.
Exactly. There are certain people need to be protected on the way out the door. It's true. So I'm glad I can help with that, at a minimum.
I made this company fail. Give me $1 million. Thank you.
A million. Speaking of optimism...
Yeah.
Well, think of this as my way to give back this holiday season by helping some CEO of a failing company parachute out.
Corporate fat cats need love too.
They do. They do indeed. You know, and I don't discriminate. So enjoy, corporate fat cats. Enjoy. And I think that pretty much rounds out my update and the updates in their entirety, which brings us around to a segment I always enjoy, which is the news. You guys report news, and I react with, huh, huh, wow, etc. And so do you. We all do it together. So, Chris, why don't you go first and wow us with some news, man?
Okay, well, you know, I decided to kind of dig a little deeper than usual. And I found out that there is an upcoming film that's going to be like the most expensive costume drama in China. And it's going to star Jackie Chan, John Cusack, and Adrian Brody in an alternate history where the Roman Empire goes against the Han over the Silk Road.
No way. Are you kidding?
No. No, I'm not. The trailer is already out. And it's full of delicious, just wow. Really? Really.
Wait, like they're adversarial?
Yeah. The Rome versus the Han. They're like,
oh.
You know, actually, you know, I do know there was a war game way back in the day that had like a fantasy setup, and part of that was the Han versus the Roman Legion. But yeah, I mean, at one point, Adrian Brody is playing the General Tiberius as the villain, and I'm like, I don't even understand how this made into the trailer because the quote is, "No, I will kill him for the sin of replacing me in your hearts." And I was, that got passed in dialogue, really? And of course, you know, with this group, the first thing I thought of was, what is this, could this be a Time Lord drama?
Could be. Wow, this is like the ultimate what if match coming to fruition in movie form. So this is a Chinese made movie, you said?
Of course. So, you know, the setup is evidently John Cusack is the Roman who goes native and works with the local guys to kick the evil guy's butt.
Oh, okay. So the underdog super advanced Han against the Romans.
Exactly.
Okay. Man, that excites me. I'm looking forward to that.
I don't think you named it.
Oh, you are correct. It's called Dragon Blade.
Oh, man. Any time? Was that coming out like 2015, I hope?
February 2015, people.
Oh, nice.
Oh, in China, there's no U.S. release date yet. I'm sorry. I was such a...
Hopefully Pirate Bay will be up and running by then.
What's the difference, right?
Awesome, man. That's cool news. I'm really excited. You guys share my optimism for that one?
I am actually a pretty big John Cusack fan, so I would love to see that.
I'm a fan of Cusack as well, but it seems like such an odd mix of people. Jackie Chan? I mean, I don't know. I'll have to wait and see.
Oh, he's rocking the soul patch kind of beard thing too, with the hair braids.
You mean it's not a Fu Manchu? Huh.
No.
Google Romans versus Chinese, or Han if you want to be more specific, and you'll see that the nerdosphere is keenly interested in what the outcome would have been of such an encounter. So awesome, man. That's wow. Looking forward to that. Does that conclude your news, sir?
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, I figured I couldn't top that for the day.
You cannot. That's going to be on my mind for some time. So, Brian, see if you can top it, though. It's your turn.
I will try to top that with just mentioning all of the crazy Sony versus the hackers versus North Korea drama. That's not exactly a single story to mention, but I am just cracked up that this silly movie has caused so much trouble lately.
The Interview, that would be, yes.
Yes.
Mm. Oh, God.
I'm kind of glad it did, and I, as much as I don't necessarily like our leaders and politicians weighing in on sort of silly issues, I'm really proud that Obama, of all, like our president, like just stood up and said, "Nah, man, like go see the movie, seriously."
I'm curious, did anyone see it?
I did not.
I don't like Obama, so no.
I was kind of burned way back in the day over something similar. When I was in college, the Last Temptation of Christ came out, and it was banned in our community and on our campus. So then we made a whole, you know, First Amendment speech, rigmarole about it. You know, the authority figures caved in. Yeah, got it to the man. And then we all ran to buy our tickets and see a showing, and I was like, you know, well, First Amendment right, but, you know, I just wasn't, you know, the payoff to watch the film didn't compare to everything else that went on. And I saw some mixed reviews for it, so I wasn't really that motivated to see it.
I'm not terribly excited about the, you know, generic stoner comedy. I'm pretty excited to see what this says about digital box office, because it was available for legitimate purchase the same day it was at theaters.
Oh, like on demand?
Yep.
So I can watch it right now on demand, is what you're telling me.
I believe you can.
Ooh. Yeah. I'm going to do that. And yeah, so you're wondering how the sales are going to be, basically, if it's released via that format on release day?
Mm-hmm. Because it didn't have amazing box office, but that's kind of to be expected due to the limited release and some people being afraid to attend and et cetera, et cetera. But people were very optimistic about the digital box office. This might be our inroads.
Cool, man.
Yeah, I think I made like $1 million total across the country.
Not impressive. Yeah, poor movie.
Well, still, that's even with all the controversy. I wonder if it had had a wide, a nationwide release, if it would have fared better. I'm assuming yes.
Just in terms of sheer numbers of box office, probably. But I mean, I don't think it would have done very well in general. Probably. Well,
it would have made more than that before word got out, though.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was supposed to be released on Christmas Day, so there's a captive audience of like 5 million Jewish people. You know, who were looking for anything to watch on that day, from what I understand. So.
Yeah.
You know, well, there is the conspiracy theory that Sony engineered all this as an actual, you know, propaganda machine for the movie.
I have heard that. That is some serious stakes. I almost cannot believe that.
Yeah, I find that difficult to believe. Sony cannot even keep, like, teenagers from, you know, infiltrating their database. I don't know if they have the sophistication to pull off something like this.
That's true.
Probably the most enduring facet of this whole thing is going to be the whole North Korea as hackers on Sony memes I've seen.
Well, you know, that is a perfect segue, guys. And Tom, I don't mean to step on your hosting prowess, but that is a perfect segue to my news segment. Unless, Brian, you have any more news?
Nope.
You know, if you see in the news just recently, the FBI is pretty much confirming that North Korea was the source of the Sony hack. So I don't remember if it was you, Tom, or Brian. One of you guys called that, I think, last episode. But it really, the FBI is confirming pretty much that, yeah, it was North Korea that hacked Sony. And was behind the Guardians of Peace.
So what's your new segment, Korea Watch?
Yeah, basically. No, I mean, it's just pretty crazy that, you know, we pretty much know that another country is hacking one of our largest, well, I guess it's a Japanese corporation, but I mean, they're pretty ubiquitous around the world. And we're just not really doing anything about it.
Well, the impression I'm getting, and I could be wrong, is I would think Korea just, you know, they just basically found whoever would work for the money they had. I mean, I would think they just, you know, got to some Russian guys and said, hey, $3 million to take down Sony.
That's my assumption, too. They probably just contracted out to somebody to do it.
I do have, I guess, a little bit more news in the vein of this. Did you guys hear that immediately after all of this, North Korea was just shut down? The internet was completely offline for like 3 days in a row?
Yes, and that was either some patriotic, you know, or pro-free speech hackers doing that, or the government, which the U.S. government just like, yeah, shut it down for a little while.
We DDoS'd an entire country.
And the cell phone. It was the cell phones as well. It wasn't just the internet.
I can believe it. Well, I was listening, I think, to NPR, and this is kind of a sad commentary on North Korea. Their unique IP addresses number in the thousands for the whole country. So wow. I suspect only the ruling elite and party insiders have unfettered, if any, internet access. So the set of targets was not great. So, you know, hitting a couple of pieces of key infrastructure probably was all it took to take them down. I mean, it sounds like they've got like a university campus's worth of internet-enabled machines over there. So
that's sad.
I think it's a fair trade-off. I mean, you threaten a company, we take down your internet for a day so you can't, like, surf our websites. That's fair. That's all the escalation that is required, in my opinion. Cam, you mentioned that, you know, we're not really doing anything about it, but what really, in your mind, would be the appropriate response, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you're right. I mean, I don't know what we would do, but it's like, you know, come on. We're hit every day by, you know, everyone around the world saying, well, you know, America does this and America does that, but, you know, we've got to be able to protect our interests at home, right? And so hopefully that if we did shut them down for 2 or 3 days, then that's you know, that's a good deterrent for the future, although I doubt it.
So our takeaway is going to be no movie for us, no porno for you?
That's takeaway number one. Takeaway number two is we kind of come out the winners in this from a PR standpoint, because their little like tin pot dictator had a temper tantrum because somebody made fun of him.
Right.
And an international incident results. I mean, it just shows them to be, or it shows him to be just a petulant child, really, on the world stage. That's my read on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, hopefully that's that's everyone else's take on it. But, you know, there's always fuel for the fire.
Well, my assumption is that he's just basically a figurehead at this point, and the real power is all his aunts and uncles are running the scene, or running the show behind the scenes.
Yeah, but I think like a year ago he executed like a bunch of his family members because he thought they were trying to take his power. So I don't know.
Mortar fire, by the way.
Did he? Is that how he killed them? He shelled them?
That's what they say.
Jesus. Wow. That's pretty brutal. Yeah, I think he killed an uncle who was a friend of, you know, who was close to his own father. So,
yeah.
I'm still at the point where it's someone else said, this is the person you need to take out, young man.
Maybe.
That's where I'm at.
His aunt, like his aunt who had divorced him years ago. You kill that bastard as your first act of power. Okay, auntie, I will. Good boy. By the way, the Nerdtravaganza in no way is declaring war on Korea. Please do not take down our website. Hack our accounts, etc.
Yes, we have no problem with you, North Korea.
Well, we kind of do, but...
Right, but unofficially.
We keep it off the wire, man, off the
right.
wire.
off the line. I guess I only had one or two other news stories. Samsung will be streaming, speaking of Sony, Samsung will, in 2015, all their TVs will have streaming solutions for PlayStation games, which, Tom, you might like. I guess they're using the Gaikai. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's G-A-I-K-I. G-A-I-K-A-I.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, Gaikai streaming system. And so you'll be able to play pretty much most of the pre-PS4 games via streaming solution on your Samsung device.
This is kind of some of the functionality in the Vita TV or the PlayStation TV, right?
Right. And I guess Samsung was the first to become a licensee and buy into their system.
Very cool. That Gaikai company, that made some waves a year or two ago when Sony acquired them, and people were speculating what the application would be. And I guess now we know.
Yes, absolutely. Star Trek 3 has been confirmed for 2016. Just in time for the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, which is pretty cool. Unfortunately, Mr. Abrams will be busy directing another franchise. Mm-hmm. So they pulled in someone else and named him a week or so ago, Justin Lin, who is the...
Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, Fast and the Furious, exactly. Thanks, Brian. So we may see a Fast and Furious Star Trek 3.
Brian was really excited about that and conjured up images of the Enterprise like drifting around Neptune. So.
Yeah, I'm really worried because I for all their issues I sort of liked the first and second one, but I don't know how this third one is going to turn out.
I heard a gasp. Who gasps at that news?
The new Star Trek movies are good, like, action space sci-fi movies. I don't know if they're good Star Trek movies.
No, I agree with you 100%.
Oh, that would be a whole podcast for another time.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can do that.
And the last thing I had was, well, two things. One, just so we're not so Sony-centric, Microsoft at E3 may be unveiling their virtual reality headset.
Yes!
Which might be pretty, might be cool, but probably not. And the last thing is, do you guys know who Aaron Paul is? He was one of the main actors in Breaking Bad. I don't know if you guys watched that series. Apparently he's been cast as Luke Skywalker in a live stage reading of The Empire Strikes Back.
Really?
So, yeah. I don't know about his acting chops. They weren't the greatest in, in Breaking Bad or the what was that movie? It was based on the video game, the racing game. He was he starred in that movie as well.
Need for Speed.
Need for Speed, yeah. Not the strongest of acting chops, but apparently he'll be reading Empire Strikes Back as Luke.
So that is to say they are, and forgive me because I am not cultured, that is to say they are doing Empire on the stage?
Yes.
Ah.
Jason Reitman, who I believe is Ivan Reitman's son, is putting on a live reading in Los Angeles. I don't think it's like a Broadway show or anything. I think it's just like a limited run. He will be reading the Luke Skywalker part.
Field Trip is in the offing, I think. So you can go see that, right?
Yeah, I'll meet you at the airport.
No, don't buy me a seat in advance. I'll take care of it.
I don't know how that reservation vanished like that.
Exactly. And that does it for me on the news extravaganza.
Awesome. That was a very news-packed extravaganza. Anything else anyone wants to add? Any comments that anybody might have withheld until this point? And that concludes it. And we can now move into the real meat and taters of tonight's episode, which is the, I thought, rather entertaining Doctor Who Christmas special. This was one of the better ones that I remember, in my opinion. You guys may have hated it, but I thought it was cool. I will preface this whole discussion by saying that I left Doctor Who just as this Capaldi fellow took over as the Doctor. Is that how you pronounce his name, Capaldi?
I believe so, yeah.
Right, so I caught him at the end of the last season, have watched nothing this season except for this, and was impressed by him. I like him as the Doctor. It's a refreshing change from the young, quirky dreamboat characters played by Matt Smith and David Tennant before him, in my opinion.
I think no one has any issue with Capaldi's performances at all in the series.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, he's a superb actor.
And when every review comes out, everybody always says that given the material he's had to work with, he does excellent, if not bringing it above the bar.
I would agree with that assessment. He seemed to deliver in this one or only episode that I've seen with him, so I liked it. And Brian, I think you're in the same boat as I am. In fact, you have maybe less Doctor Who experience. What did you think of his skill as it was displayed in this episode?
I tried to catch up on a lot of Doctor Who stuff during the mega marathon they did for the holidays. So I think it was BBC America, obviously, was showing pretty much every episode back to back to back to back to back to back ad nauseum. And I caught bits and pieces of it here and there, and I caught this one and that one. And he was definitely my favorite of the three I saw, but I couldn't really tell you who the other two were. Soccer guy and bow tie I wasn't thrilled with.
Right.
Yeah, that was the two I mentioned. Yeah, soccer guy was Matt Smith, bow tie was the other one, David Tennant.
Tennant.
Yeah.
No, bow tie would be Matt Smith, because Matt Smith is like, bow ties are cool.
Right.
Sorry. Yes, Brian. Yes, Matt Smith was both bow tie and soccer. The other guy you're thinking of, though, is David Tennant, and he didn't wear a bow tie, but he kind of set the stage for the bow tie that was to come, in my opinion.
He was proto-hipster?
Yes, he was proto-hipster doctor, yes. Yes,
yeah,
yes,
he
yes,
wore yes. A ton of really tight suits.
Right. So Matt Smith took the tight suits, added a bow tie and a weird hairstyle, and then you had the ultimate.
I could not tell you exactly which two of those two I did not like, but which three of those two I didn't like.
Tennant played the son of the minister in one of the Harry Potter movies, the one that was actually the secret Death Eater, if you recall that at all.
Yeah, I think that was Prisoner of Azkaban, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and he also played, I don't know if you saw the Broadchurch series. He's the lead investigator in the Broadchurch BBC miniseries.
Which was also done as Grace Point in Fox and just wrapped up recently, I think.
Yeah, and he's also on that as well. He's on both.
I've seen previews for that because I've been watching BBC to catch Doctor Who stuff, so I will have to give that a shot.
Yeah, they're coming out with a second, I guess, they call it season, but it's like five or six episodes, you know? I would definitely recommend the first Broadchurch. It was extremely compelling. It's totally I mean, it's nothing Doctor Who related, obviously. It's like a murder mystery of a child's been abducted and killed, and he and another a woman are trying to figure out who, you know, who did it. And it's a really great mystery.
Yeah, well, from my observation for that TV show, is actually season two, because from what I'm getting watching the Grace Point stuff, that the town is rocked and just devastated to its core as all the lies and all of the things are exposed. And I'm like, what's left of the town for season two?
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see, right?
These and other questions to be answered when we discuss that show.
Right.
I suspect someone will wake up and it will all have been a dream.
Ooh, that's almost a perfect segue back to this episode.
Yes,
right.
That's the perfect segue.
Speaking of dreams and the premise behind this Christmas episode, which was a species of, what were they, dream crabs or something that attached to people?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What did you guys think of the use of these creatures? They it seems like there are a lot of creatures in Doctor who, if you give the time of day, will do bad things to you. I guess is what I'm trying to say. Does that make any sense?
Well, that's been kind of Moffat's thing, and I think he's starting to kind of use it a little too much, you know. Don't blink. Don't think about this. What was some other don'ts he's had?
Oh, God.
Weren't there some creatures that, like, if you were upset or something, they didn't like that, or the silence, if you looked at them, then you looked away, you didn't remember
right.
them again? Or
exactly.
It all came down to these impossible scenarios where you can't have your normal reactions without bad things happening. Like, these creatures all live... I guess it makes them more plausible because they would live outside most people's perception most of the time. But yeah, it does seem to be a common theme, Chris.
And this one was like, don't think of the pink elephant in the room. So, of course, what are you going to think of?
Right, right. So, yeah, these face-hugging crabs would attach themselves to you and basically give you a wonderful, pleasant, lucid dream while they ate your brain, was the basic premise, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, they basically anesthetized you while they basically made you feel good while they were killing you.
Right, right, right. Okay. So I just want to ask something. Did you guys catch, like, at the very beginning when the doctor mentioned we're dying? Like right away, he let it be known that you're in the dream before they dove down a few more layers. Did you catch that in the episode at all?
I did. But I don't think I realized it until... way later, you know what I mean?
That is something that I've learned from watching Doctor Who, to talk about things that are revisited. They'll drop these nonsensical lines. So if somebody says something if somebody appears to have a Tourette's-like episode where they just let loose with something that makes no sense, hang on to that. That's coming back.
A little foreshadowing, yeah.
Right, whatever it is. Like, if the doctor should happen to say, you know, oh, popsicle sticks, well, that's coming back. Just you wait.
Well, a perfect example of that is, like, in a previous episode, they had this don't look because there's this creature that can perfectly camouflage itself. Find out later in the episode something completely different as a twist, but I'm wondering if we're still going to go back to that same room and that same scenario and find out what's happening on the other side.
Yeah, it's... They preload you with a lot of things like that. I don't really dislike it. It's clever enough to me, but... it does seem like maybe there's no getting around repeating certain themes, I guess, if you're writing a show long enough, right?
Well, how long has it been around, Cam? Is it now 10 years or what?
The New Who was rebooted in 2005, so yeah, coming up on 10 years.
Oh, how I miss Eccleston. Such a great return of the series.
I really do like Eccleston, though, but yeah, he was... That first season was a little wonky.
Well... The production values, and I hate to use that hackney term, were not high compared to what they do now. Is that what you were driving at? Yeah.
I mean, you can tell just by watching the first few episodes that they sort of were trying to find their way, which, I mean, you can't begrudge them that. I mean, they were bringing it back after however many years. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a huge fan, so I never really minded it.
Right, so back to this episode. Actually, I'm going to step away from the episode and ask you guys something else. And then we'll get back into it. We mentioned Capaldi, and everybody seems to like his acting, and it was a bold move, you know, now that we're 10 years into this reboot, for them to have the Doctor played by a non-young hipster dreamboat. Although he strikes me as something of an older hipster, because he still wears tight suits. But hey, man, at least he can pull them off. I wish I could. But that said, do you think that we will see an older and perhaps not cute, sprightly, attractive companion at some time in the near future?
That is a good question.
Yeah, I don't think they would do that just from a PR marketing standpoint. I mean, they spent so much time and effort getting these young fans drawn in. You know, I think they're going to have to keep either the cute, sprightly, hot chick, or then, you know, maybe get an older, more distinguished companion, but with a younger, you know, a younger doctor. Although, I don't know how they're going to do that, because this is the 13th regeneration, or right, Chris? The 13th regeneration, which he wasn't even supposed to be able to get that far along the way.
Oh, so, well, the update is, you know, he's been regenerated. He's got a full set of regenerations now.
Wow, really? Okay, so he can keep going?
I do believe they touched on that at the conclusion of the last season. Like, oh, my regeneration counter's been reset. Or he didn't say that but precisely, but they did let you know that at the end of the last season, did they not?
That was the impression I got. Or, you know, it was such an oddball regeneration because it was the climax of the whole thing that, you know, they hinted that, you know, anything the writers want to come up with is what we're going to go with at this point.
Yeah, I am curious about the ratings with this new older doctor, because of course I went and read basically forums and websites that were talking about Doctor Who in the wake of the announcement, and you had a lot of "ew, he's old" sort of reactions.
I think this has been the most divisive season they've had with new
because
Who.
Of the new actor.
Well, I think the new actor, as well as they're trying to take on a lot of new directions and a lot of new risks. But on the flip side, like I said before, I feel like Moffat is kind of going back to the well a bit too much on his themes at the same time. So some people are getting Moffat burnout, but some people really like, you know, either Capaldi's, you know, performances, or they like the direction they took by picking Capaldi, as compared to other people who kind of still liked, because with the whole Matt Smith era, the theme was kind of fairy tales. And it was this girl going on a fairy tale with her magical buddy.
Yes.
And it's now kind of gone to being much more of a kind of darker, you know, where do you go down and pull? Like, this whole meta season was about soldiers, not liking soldiers and then eventually coming back to, like, respecting them. Or, you know, realizing the value of the soldier in society. You want to get really deep into that. But, you know, when they first introduced that arc, they were kind of like, wait, he came back from a time war, and now suddenly he has a beef with soldiers when he was one?
Well, he's conflicted, is he not, for the horrific, for the horrors he inflicted on his enemies in the time war, right?
Some of them, yeah. Or it was more, he's fighting the Daleks, so there's not really much conflict there with that part, but more he had to make a horrible choice of, he had to take out his own people because, trying to be very pragmatic, his race was evolving their society into something that was almost kind of as bad as the Daleks.
So the solution was for him to, what was it, time lock his people or something like that?
Gallifrey,
yeah.
He thought he destroyed it, and then found out later that it was shunted off somewhere else. But for, like, until right before Capaldi, he was under the impression that he had pretty much sacrificed his own people when he was the lone one that was left.
I know this one. He threw it into a pocket universe.
Yes.
Yes. So cool.
Yep. And then supposedly, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I might have missed this, but I guess that's where the Master came back from?
Yeah, that's where they hinted at.
Who was then Missy in season 8?
Man, we need to put a big spoiler warning on our podcast at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll say again, I missed this season. Did the Master make a reappearance this season?
Yes.
Along with Cybermen, I'm told?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Gender-bended, actually. She's now Missy.
Cyberwomen now.
Cybergals?
Actually, that gets to where my theory is that Capaldi, to some degree, is an homage to the old Doctors for Old Who. And kind of, you know, getting the fans happy with that before they do something radical with the next regeneration. Mm. Like maybe having a female doctor or a doctor who's not a white guy.
Sure, sure.
Well, you know, Brian, I'm sorry, Tom, like just going back to the ratings thing, I believe the ratings were the highest ever for the eighth season. But I believe it was also the most negatively reviewed season of all since the 2005 reboot.
Really?
So, yeah, so it's a little inconsistent there, but yeah, BBC is, from what I've read and seen, is pretty happy with the ratings.
Oh, good.
And that's why they brought back, yeah, that's why they brought back Jenna Coleman again to play Clara for the ninth season and Capaldi.
She's fine.
Oh, okay. That was my question. What do you guys think of Coleman?
She annoyed me in the beginning of the season, but she sort of grew on me as it went.
I almost feel unqualified to comment, but I really don't like her. She has this kind of like just blank smile. Does she have any idea what's going on, or is she just kind of like?
Well, no, I think like towards the end of season 8. There was a little more depth to her, and you know, her trusting the doctor, and you know, really trying to bring her boyfriend around to the idea of her, you know, traveling with the doctor and what they were doing, and you know, there was this whole conflict between her boyfriend Danny Pink and the doctor, which, by the way, bringing it back to the Christmas episode, I thought was tied off pretty nicely. At least they got to have their Christmas and say goodbye, albeit in a dream,
but the other person's dream, so it didn't really happen ever.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But that was one of the highlights of the episode.
Yeah, that was a, I guess, Christmas gift to the fans. But, you know, I think that's why she grew on me, is because she started becoming a real companion rather than just eye candy that just ran around and did what the doctor said, you know?
I'll have to give them credit for that. As much as she is eye candy, and I'm not I am objectifying a little. I do like looking at attractive women. Sue me.
You're not the only one.
Right. But as attractive as she is and a pleasure as she is to look at, I feel like they've kind of developed her character. She gets a little bit of vacant stare, doll eye every once in a while. but I definitely see where Brian may be coming from, but I think he has not benefited from watching the whole season, just as I have not. And I will go on to say that Amy Pond, I don't remember the actress's name.
Karen Gillan.
She was, in my estimation, 15 orders of magnitude more attractive, and they developed her character quite nicely. Like the whole dynamic with her and Rory and the doctor, I thought was really well done.
Oh yeah, Rory's one of my favorite
guys. Yeah, Rory's the man. Rory and Mickey are the two like forgotten most underrated characters. Mickey was Rose's boyfriend, many will remember, and Rory as Amy's husband. I mean, they're hilarious.
Represent, Cam, represent.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, my side digression is they actually made a comment about that stare at one point. In one of the episodes, the doctor looks at her and he goes, "Oh my God, how do you do that? Your eyes, they look like they inflate." And I think that's one of the reasons why Doctor Who kind of is still going strong, is they, at some point, they actually kind of notice what's going on and reference it as they try to fix it at the same time.
They're kind of self-aware.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's a good segue to Nick Frost's character in the episode.
Oh, amazing, amazing.
You know, Nick Frost, he started off as one of the crew for Space, the TV show in the 90s that was the stepping stone for Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, and Nick Frost. And he was like their roommate. And they said, "Hey, do you want to act?" And he kind of jumped in with no real formal training. And I think if he was more of an attractive guy, he would be getting a lot more parts. He would be one of those British guys we see plastered everywhere these days.
Sorry, but no idea who that is. I'm terrible with actors.
Santa Claus.
Oh, okay. He
yeah, he plays.
Honestly,
Santa Claus.
I thought that was
I thought it was Simon Pegg.
I thought it was that other guy, Ricky Gervais, actually.
Nope.
Yeah, he looked very much like Ricky Gervais, but it wasn't him. But have you guys seen Hot Fuzz, Shaun of
yes.
the Dead, those kind of movies? Yeah, so he's the more portly of the
oh,
two,
he's...
obviously. Simon Pegg being the skinny blonde guy, and he's the best friend.
He's the jolly fat goofy friend. Oh,
yes,
all right,
exactly.
Yeah, no, he's pretty good. He did well in this one as well. I'll say I thought he played Santa very well.
He was great, and I loved that we talked about the dream crabs, and obviously that was sort of a throwback or homage to Alien, and Simon Pegg and he both that's like their thing, you know, with Shaun of the Dead and all these movies that they do. It's sort of a takeoff on the traditional horror film, all of their films. Like Hot Fuzz was a takeoff on the buddy cop, you know, action film. And so I think that that wasn't a coincidence that the facehuggers, well, that the space crabs looked a lot like the facehuggers from Alien.
Agreed. And, you know, as absurd as Doctor Who is, you accept that the Doctor and all of his zaniness is real. And when you're confronted with Santa Claus, like, straight up, hey, I'm Santa Claus, I found that a little hard to swallow, as I believe they intended it to be.
And one of my... Go ahead, sorry.
And I have to say, I'm really happy with how they handled the Santa Claus angle.
One of my favorite lines that dealt with Santa Claus, and exactly what you're talking about, was the Doctor's incredibility. How do you get all the Christmas presents in that stupid bag?
yes.
Bigger on the inside.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. No, I couldn't agree with you more, Tom. I thought they handled it great, and like we said, the acting was just superb.
Yeah.
I like that he had that whole level between being self-aware but having kind of an edge to him. You know, if Santa had suddenly become like the villain, it wouldn't have surprised me as much. Because the way he was acting, you felt like you could have turned on a dime at any moment.
Right, as plausible as Santa could be, I suppose, right? That he was just a jolly cookie-eating buffoon, right?
Yeah, the only thing that I thought was pretty cheesy was when Santa burst into that Arctic base or whatever it was, and like it was almost like a throwback to the claymation Christmas movies with like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, when like the little robots were like walking into the pole that he just blew.
Yes.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on here? Am I on acid? But
you know what? I don't think that was unintentional. I think that was full on.
Oh, I'm sure.
I liked that. I like that because literally the completely unbelievable Santa character just burst into the episode. Like, what the hell are you doing here? And how are they going to rectify this by the end of this?
Yeah, but that was a little funny to me. But everything else,
I liked Santa, and I liked how he worked. So for listeners who haven't watched this episode, massive spoilers, we're done. you know, he was there because it was a dream. It wasn't real, therefore Santa could exist. But I liked how Santa, just as What's-Her-Face's boyfriend, had power. Though he was conjured up by the imaginations of the people there, he, because of how they imagined him, he was granted power to affect the outcome, you know?
Right.
That was cool. That was cool. And what was really sweet about the boyfriend scene was that he was just her projection. He was just how she remembered him. But she remembered him so fondly and remembered all the good things about him, such that in that situation, he would lose her to save her, you know?
Right, yeah, he was true for it.
And so it was with Santa. He was willing to be there to the end, have all of them in his sleigh till the very end, and then see them off safely home. I don't know, I was kind of touched by it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I thought it was, like I said, I think it was a nice way to wrap up that whole relationship. I wasn't sold on him in the very beginning when he first, you know, got thrown into the mix. But he again, like Jenna Coleman grew on me, he grew on me as well. And I was sort of sad to see him go. But I thought the way that they handled it was pretty good.
If it's one thing I've learned with New Who, and especially with Moffat, is that you have just got to have the trust and go along for the ride. And then wait till the ride's finished before you make your decision.
Oh, yeah, because he'll kick you in the teeth several times before he, you know, gives you the ice cream cone. That's for sure.
I will ask a question about that then, because I'm new to this whole Moffat thing. I'm new to the whole Doctor Who thing. And so we're just going to, like, really do spoilers, right?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Might as well. Right. We're way past
that. We just need to put it as a big kind of stamp on whatever photo we're going to use.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
And I do not know what to think about this. There's very clear evidence that he's still dreaming. So is that just a Doctor Who thing? Did they just, like, write that off? Or can we just not believe anything we see from now until, like, they resolve that?
The answer is yes and no.
So first of all, you guys...
Well, they always leave it open-ended like that.
I'm not going to watch the episodes if they're all a dream and, like, he wakes up and he's Eccleston again.
Do you guys understand where Brian's coming from with that, though? Did you see the like the evidence that the dream was still ongoing at the end?
I'm trying to remember.
Yes, but I will say that, you know, they did a similar sort of mechanic to that in an episode called Amy's Choice, which was Karen Gill and Amy Pond, Tom, your favorite, where it was sort of this dream state, and she and Rory and the doctor, the previous doctor, Matt Smith, were stuck in this sort of dream state, and they had to decide whether or not, you know, which one. They kept getting shot back and forth to these different levels of consciousness, I guess, and they had to decide which one was the actual, which one was reality and which one was the dream, and if they chose wrong, then they were going to be dead. And then, but even at, when you think that they chose right at the end of the episode, it, you know, it always gives you that sort of, well, maybe they didn't, you know. I think that's just a function of Doctor Who, and just, I think you just got to live with
that. So it might be unresolved. I mean, the tangerines in the foreground implying that the dream could still be ongoing could mean that the entire next season could be in a dream, and we may or may not ever find out.
I mean, that's the genius or insanity or just stupidity, depending on who you ask, of Moffat. It's you go into an episode or a season or whatever it is, thinking there's no way that they can possibly write themselves out of this. And then, bam, you get smacked in the face and you're like, oh my God, yeah, that makes sense, you know? So I just think it's a wait and see type thing.
I don't know if I'm a fan of that. I don't know if I want to wait and see. Like, I kind of feel like, I don't know.
What if it was never resolved, Ryan? Would you be unsatisfied then?
Oh, then I would just lie to myself and say that the doctor had been dreaming about all of the hipster doctors along the way.
Well, you know, the tangerine could also represent that, you know, Santa Claus actually is real in some sort of metaphorical sense.
Okay, so what about this? What about Clara waking up and immediately knowing what the doctor had just dreamed?
She did.
Well, I think they were all psychically linked by the crabs, though. I mean, I don't think there was any dispute that the crabs were actually real, right?
You do realize at this point, if we have this conversation, somewhere Moffat is like rubbing his hands together going, yes, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's
So what you're saying is that she would have been dreaming while the doctor was dreaming that she was old?
But that was a dream within a dream.
That's what
right?
I'm saying. It was the doctor's dream that she was old, so she shouldn't have known about that. But the first words were, am I young again?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, and we're doing massive spoilers anyway, the impression I got, and I could be wrong, and some of the things that are out there in the internet, was that this was supposed to be her last episode, that she was going to quit. And at some point, she decided that she still enjoyed either working with Capaldi, or she liked the paycheck, take your pick, or both. And she changed her mind, so they kind of tacked on that final ending. She was supposed to be 63 years old, and, you know, a bittersweet goodbye, because Moffat likes to pull off the bittersweet goodbyes.
That was a really good ending, in my opinion. I almost wish they hadn't undone that.
You would have been happy with just her being old, and that's it.
That was really sweet.
Off to the next season.
That was really sweet, yeah. I thought.
Well, her being old, and then it satisfied our ageist society's requirement that the doctor and she not be romantically entwined. However, it implied that she kind of had a thing for him. She said as much. And now that she's old and 63, it's appropriate, right?
I could see that.
I think that's a good point.
I could see that.
I just bring that up because that kind of annoys me. That I don't know. It almost... I like that ending if that was to be the ending, and I didn't because I felt like it was a cave-in to societal pressure, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, so Brian, it just fell flat for you?
I enjoyed it, but going forward, this is my problem with Doctor Who in general. This is why I'm not a huge fan of it, even though I do like it, is I enjoyed it, but I don't have any faith that there's any kind of continuity for me to become passionate about, because it could all change if the guy wakes up.
I get that. But I mean, I think over the last 9 seasons, that's, or 8 seasons, that's sort of been a common theme. you know, and it's funny that you bring it up, because I think that sort of did bother me as well in the very beginning when I started watching the reboot. But it's just, at this point, you just sort of, like I said, you either love Moffat or you hate him. And he hasn't disappointed me yet in terms of, you know how he dealt with the previous companions and doctors and stuff like that. So I guess I got that trust bank built up to this point. But you know, there's plenty of other people that you'll talk to that, you know, that'll tell you Moffat sucks and he's terrible and, you know, he's just going to screw you. So I guess it's up to you to decide.
Word is he's taking over the Game of Thrones television show. So you've got source material from an author who loves to screw you, followed by... No, I'm just kidding. That's not
that. Yeah, right. Well, did you guys see the new trailer for that?
No, is that looking good?
Yeah, it looks pretty intriguing.
Well, we're getting to the point where we're wondering if we're going to be getting previews to the books now versus the other way around.
If that begins to be the case, I will cease watching because I don't want HBO informing my reading. Thank you very much.
No, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Oh, man. Brian, are you a fan of... This is sort of off topic, but on topic because we're kind of talking about shows. Do you like the Game of Thrones television show?
I have never watched a single episode.
No interest because you're a fan of the books or...
I don't have HBO. I don't get invited to the cool like orgy parties. I don't know. It just never happened.
Wow, Tom, have you seen them?
Yeah, I've seen them all. They are a pretty increasingly radical departure from the books, but yes. I, as a standalone set of work, I like the shows. I like the episodes. They're pretty good.
Yeah, and it's sort of like I agree with you 100%. And I mean, I think that they really hit a home run with the casting. I think if the casting would have been different, it would have been a much different show. I mean, Peter Dinklage as Tyrion is just I'm speechless as that.
He steals the show. He steals and, the show. There's no question.
That simple decision, that simple casting decision, sealed the deal for me right there.
Probably, yeah. It's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. I mean, I like Tywin. I like pretty much Cersei. I like pretty much who they cast for all of them. But Tyrion especially. I mean, he's just a Peter Dinklage is.
That's
amazing.
On par with putting Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
Yeah.
This probably comes as no surprise because he's probably everyone's favorite. Tyrion is of course like my favorite character from the books,
right.
And they could not have chosen a better actor. Brian, I know you've read the books. I believe you like Tyrion as a character. It's worth watching the show just to see this guy treat the character right.
And he carries, like, you know, the from the books, the relationship between him and Jaime is, like, such, you know, such an important thing. And, like, I don't necessarily care that much for the actor that they have playing Jaime in the TV series. But their interactions, just because of Dinklage, is just amazing. You know, like, before the trial by combat, where you know, I don't want to do any spoilers for we've already put enough spoilers in, but just, you know, when he's in jail and he's sitting there with Jaime and they're having that conversation, I thought that was, for me, was probably one of the best parts of the series.
It was, because Jaime is one of the few people that always unconditionally loved Tyrion, and as a result, Tyrion is devoted to Jaime. You know, like they have a really strong bond as brothers, and it's really cool. Wow.
Yeah, I thought they did.
But the sniping with Cersei is always entertaining.
Indeed.
Yeah, true.
Well, we kind of got off the beaten path here. But since we're off it, one thing I cannot reconcile with the books, and I'm just going to mention it because I know Brian hasn't seen it yet. I'm just going to just mention it as kind of a show-closing point of outrage. The third Hobbit movie. Yow.
Well, you bring up that's a very timely topic to bring up. We actually on our website should have up within the next day or two my movie review of The Hobbit, the third installment by Peter Jackson, and I join you in the outrage, and I fully, in the interest of full disclosure, totally admit that I'm a Tolkien snob, and so you know, hey, it wasn't for me, but. You know, I did you see it, Tom, or did?
Oh, I saw it, and you don't need to be you don't need to be a Tolkien snob to be outraged by this. You need to just be somebody who wants the work treated with some degree of respect.
Right. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spoil my review, but yeah, I echo your sentiments.
So yeah, I saw this cool movie with a lot of elves and dwarves and short people in it called The Five Something, and it was an entertaining film.
And a strong female character, though, at least.
And a strong two or three strong female characters in there.
Even though they had no basis in reality, that's okay. They were strong female characters.
That offends me, honestly. I understand the reasoning behind wanting strong female characters, but The Hobbit wasn't written with strong female characters. It was a product of its time. Shoehorning in made-up characters in a movie that already had, I don't even want to say shoehorning, it was like filling mixed into the recipe, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, Brian made a great point when we were talking about it the other night. I would have much rather them have just made one of the male characters for the book a female.
Yes. Thora Oakenshield.
Yeah, just, yeah, I would have, I mean, I'm all for strong female characters. I think there should be more. But don't just create one out of nowhere. I feel that's, I mean, I'm not a woman, obviously I can't speak for them, but I feel like that's even more offensive to women, just to just make up this character and say, okay, here she is, and she's strong, and she's great, and she's just as good as Legolas. But Tolkien never even, you know, even thought of that, unless maybe he was on the crapper, you know?
You know, if you were going to force Legolas into it, just make it Legola, make it like, you know, Thranduil's daughter, and just have her in the, you know, there were other, yeah. Right, I'm with you, they didn't need to, in addition to all the other stuff they added, make up a character out of whole cloth just for the sake of a strong female character. That just seemed like a cheap cop-out to me.
I think it's a lose-lose either way, because if you make a, I mean, just looking at the old, now we call it old, the second Battlestar Galactica, I mean, there was like a throwdown over making some of those characters male.
Well, yeah, Starbuck was a female,
yeah, but
as
she,
opposed to a male, but,
she
which
was
is great.
Awesome.
Oh, she was amazing.
She was.
Yeah.
But she was amazing. We forget before we found out how awesome that show was going to be. Oh, my Starbuck is, who is this female Starbuck? She do not exist in my world. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Well, they threw a bone to the original Starbuck fans. Wasn't that the guy that played the Tom Garris, or what was his last name?
Oh, yeah, Rob Hatch.
Yeah.
Merrick or whatever. Yeah.
Merrick. Trivia.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that's a perfect example, Tom, that you brought up. I mean, they took a character that was already, you know, entrenched, but they made it a female, and she did amazingly well. I mean, she's my favorite Starbuck, and I watched the original series too. So why couldn't they have done that with, a Tolkien character, rather than just be like, okay, here's a female, and she's just as good as Legolas. As a matter of fact, Legolas is in love with her, and she's sort of spurning him, and she's instead in love with a hobbit, in love with a dwarf.
Yeah, that was going to be
a bit far. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I mean, they could have made Beorn a girl. It would have been just as cool to see a female Beorn be airdropped in as a paratrooper at the end of the movie. Yes, Brian, that really happened.
Oh, God. I mean, make anyone a girl. I mean, just Jesus, don't just make things up and just expect us to swallow it.
No. And Brian, you've gone silent. I know we've gotten off the beaten trail from the main point of our episode, but you've gone silent because you haven't seen this gem of a movie yet, right?
I've gone silent because I was just running through the list of make the character who is old enough to have seen the light of the trees, who is kingly enough to use King's Foil, who is a better archer than Legolas, who could probably like break Gandalf's staff, who could probably spurn any of the best love interest from the previous movie. Oh my God.
Right.
Yeah, Tariel is not a strong female character. She is the strongest female character.
She's a Mary Sue. And
she
I
really
hate
is,
that.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's a Mary Sue for all pop culture, I don't want to say feminist, but maybe reactionary pseudo-feminists, right?
That is the ultimate in kowtowing.
Indeed it is.
I think we beat that to death.
Yeah.
We really did.
You know what? Maybe in another future podcast we can talk about that sort of thing. Where do we decide we're going to include or not include or gender bend things so that some of our, you know, some of our cooler geek stuff can go on to future generations and make everybody feel like that they can have a hero they can look up to, or if we need to do that, or something like that.
I'm willing to discuss that. My philosophy is it's time to make new characters who are people of color, who are female, who are of different sexual orientations, because otherwise it just feels like you're doing a retread on an existing character. I don't know. It seems like something of a cop-out to me, and as well it induces all sorts of nerd rage, which is then confused as racism, homophobia, sexism, when in a lot of times it is just nerd rage, which is different.
Absolutely.
True. I mean, a perfect example, I'll wrap up on that part, is, you know, we have a lot of cool stuff that's been inspired by the pulps of the 1930s, the proto-comic books, basically. And that stuff is just has equal bits of awesome and equal bits of, oh my god, it's the 1930s.
Right.
Racism beyond racism and everything else, you know.
Well, certain things are just not acceptable by today's standards, so exactly. We don't revisit them, at least in whole. And I don't know, like, I didn't think that The Hobbit reached that level. Yes, it was light on females. We can acknowledge that. And then we already said that there were other ways to address it than just making up a super Mary Sue character, as Brian mentioned. But maybe we could talk about The Hobbit next episode, because I'm going to drag Brian to see it. And maybe, who knows, maybe we can have a discussion on identity and gender in media. God knows that topic's never talked about on any show or YouTube or the news.
True.
Absolutely.
Anita Sarkeesian, you are welcome to join us for that discussion. But to bring it back around and wrap it up, nothing objectionable about the Doctor Who episode with regard to identity politics, I think, right?
No, I think British shows in general, especially Doctor Who, have done a pretty good job. I mean, there are so many calls for a female doctor in there, and I personally wouldn't have an issue with a female doctor. I think, you know, God, there's been 12, 13 of them already. You know, it's probably more than past time to have one. But aside from that, I think they're pretty good about, you know, as a person of color myself, you know, mixing in a lot of people of color, females, and putting them in good, prominent roles. Even a lot of times in you know, very dastardly and the sort of evil roles, which I like as well. And I think they pull it off really well.
Yeah, I'll give that to, I guess, the BBC or whomever's ultimately responsible for Doctor Who. They're pretty good about being inclusive, but not thumping you over the head with, hi, black character.
Right. Tolkien. You know. Tolkien. No pun intended, the token, you know.
Yes. Oh, man. Okay, that episode title is Tolkienism.
we got the title, we just got to put it in the can, right?
Exactly. So anyway, Doctor Who episode, rate it, guys. Let's finish it up with a rating on a scale of 1 to 10. I'll go first. I'm going to give it an 8. I was pretty satisfied.
I'll say it's the best episode I've seen.
So 10?
Sure.
I will give it 7.5 sonic screwdrivers out of 10.
Nice.
I'll give it about 8 TARDISes.
All right.
There you have it.
TARDI.
Tardai?
Yes.
Tardai.
Paying attention. So there you have it. Coming in pretty favorably reviewed in our various scales. I think the Christmas episode was a success. I'm glad that we now have an avid Doctor Who viewer in Brian, I'm sure. And I cannot wait to offend everyone with our no doubt clumsy and ham-fisted attempt to address gender and ethnicity issues in entertainment in an upcoming episode.
Yeah, I think just tokenism itself as the title probably just puts us too far down the rabbit hole. We might as well just go with it, right?
Agreed. All right, so unless you guys have anything else, I think we can begin our farewell housekeeping.
Yeah, I think we beat it to death.
Okay, so I guess I'll go first by inviting all of our listeners, Time Lords or otherwise, to check us out on a regular basis by subscribing to our podcast via iTunes or whatever other pod-catching software they happen to use, and by rating us favorably and writing us an awesome, well-thought-out review, if they do not mind. And as well, if you would prefer to check us out through streaming, we cannot recommend highly enough the top-notch streaming service known as Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus want us on Google Plus, and join the Nerd Extravaganza HQ group on Facebook.
Hop into your TARDIS and jet back in time to all of our past episodes and all of our other content at our website, nerdstravaganza.com. And do not exterminate us with emails, but do please send one at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And as we mentioned during the episode, don't forget to check out Cam's awesome review of the soon-to-be award-winning and definitely loyal to the book version of The Hobbit.
And don't forget to check out our YouTube channel and all of our board game reviews and other content.
And with all that, Brian, we'll let you take it away. Do the Alonzi. I know you love it.
I really hate Alonzi. Oh, my God.
Alonzi!
Perfect.
Oh, man, that's great.